Artest.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Later on in the program, we're going to open up the phone lines. But on the first part of today's program, we're going to talk about Florida's environment. It's become a big issue in the U.S. Senate race and some of the other races that are on the ballot this fall. So we'll talk about that first. But before we do that, two or three listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we ended up talking a lot about the Stand Your Ground shooting in Clearwater. Here's what several listeners had to say.
You had a guest on that was talking about things, and he said that everything that happens can be boiled down to one word, race. I believe that that is true.
Bert, and I just want to thank you for another great show that informs us what we need to really know what's going on here. And I just wonder what the discussion would be if the shooter was black and the victim was white last week over in Clearwater. And I want to thank Bob, the last caller, for his thought. I really think the law supports hate, fear, and ignorance and just needs to really be looked at and taken care of. It's something that we really shouldn't have to deal with. It's not right, Rob.
Wendell in downtown St. Petersburg, and I just wanted to make a comment about the governor's race, the Florida governor's race. I was really surprised to hear about that mall being built down in the Everglades and that Gwen Graham was a part of that. That should direct your moral and environmental compass toward N or no. Big money, once again, is in our politics. When is the common middle-class person going to vote for someone who has their interests at hand? Multimillionaires can't possibly represent the average Floridian interest. Levine is probably in the same money bubble as Graham, so who knows? For all the people who swear that voting is the way and that America is fair and on the level with regards to the voting, should vote for Gillum, certainly in the primary. Realistically, we should vote for Gillum just out of principle. But to test the trustworthiness of our voting system, everyone should vote for Gillum in the primary. You'll quickly see how fast the establishment, the news outlets, the authorities, the pundits, and think tanks will discredit, disavow, or make up allegations in order to sway public opinion against a competent black man. Let's test that system. In regards, real quick, to standing your ground, we all know if this is a racial issue. If the tables were turned, we know that what would happen. How often have black people who have fired a gun been released from jail during an ongoing investigation?
There you have several listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. Well, the environment has become a big issue in several of the races that are on the ballot in August and also in this November. And one of the big issues where the environment has become central to the race is in the Senate race between Governor Rick Scott and the current U.S. Senator Bill Nelson. We're going to talk about Florida's environment today from the perspective of the Florida Springs, but it connects to all the other environmental issues that are out there, including the red tide that's going on here on the southwest Florida coast and also the problems with Lake Okeechobee. Earlier today, I spoke with Robert Knight, who's the director of a nonprofit group, the Howard T. Odom Florida Springs Institute. That's a nonprofit that's in the forefront of advocating for Florida Springs, and I talked to him about Florida's vast underground aquifer and spring system. Robert Knight, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Oh, I'm glad to be here today. Thank you.
So you're just outside of Gainesville in High Springs. What's the status of Florida's many springs, would you say, right now on this day in 2018?
Well, actually, it's in some ways a very good time for springs in that we're having record rainfall amounts, which increases the flow of our 1,000-plus springs in North Florida. There's certainly some bad things that are going on with springs, and that's we've been focused on those a lot, especially during years of drought and the ongoing rain of, I guess, nitrogen fertilizer on the ground is creating some pretty bad water quality issues in our springs.
The springs at their best are crystal clear. Are most of Florida's springs still crystal clear, or is there encroachment from, let's say, the results of the nitrate pollution?
Many of them are still clear. There's over 1,000 artesian springs identified in Florida, recorded all the way from the western end of the Panhandle down to Sarasota County. It's the most amazing concentration of springs in the world. Those springs are dependent on rainfall and recharge of the aquifer to get their flow. And overall, the amount of groundwater pumping that's currently going on with the aquifer is taking away about a third of the average flow for the spring. So one thing we're seeing this year, a year of high rainfall, is in spite of the fact that springs have higher flows now, the rivers also have higher flows from the rainfall, and that is backing up some of our springs. So, for example, a spring that has almost never gone dark before is Gilchrist Blue Spring outside of High Springs. That's the newest state park. It's actually blacked out right now, so that it was blue last month, but it's black right now. So that's partly a result of our excessive groundwater pumping. Many of the springs are also turning green or yellow from reduced flows and in some cases from the algal proliferation that you not only see in the rivers of South Florida, but you see in the rivers of North Florida as well.
When you say a spring is blacked out, what causes that?
Well, our rivers are dominated by tannic acids, or the same compounds that make tea brown during periods of high rainfall because of the swamps that feed many of our rivers, like the Hillsborough River down in your area, and up here the Santa Fe and the Suwannee Rivers, the Withlacoochee River. These rivers tend to have black water in them in addition to the clear water that comes in from springs. And so during lower flow in the rivers, the springs, the clear water of the springs can dominate and the springs are clear. But right now the Santa Fe River is in flood stage due to the high rainfall. And that is actually, there's not enough pressure in the springs anymore to push that water out all the time like it did historically. So what you have is tannic water over the clear water. In some cases, one spring, a very large spring that we're studying on the Santa Fe right now, is actually flowing backwards. And so the dark water is going into the aquifer, and it's coming out of people's wells. When they turn on their taps, they're getting dark water coming out of their taps. That happened last year during the high rainfall events. The whole city of High Springs had to shut their water off because of dark water getting in from reverse flow in our springs.
Which spring is that where that's happening, where the pressure isn't strong enough?
It's called Santa Fe Spring. It's just upstream of Olino State Park near I-75. It's a large historic first magnitude spring, which is the largest group of springs. And that's not the only one. There are numerous springs on the upper Santa Fe now that are reversing flow during high rain events because of the regional effect of groundwater pumping. Like I said, if you just look at the averages, about a third of the spring flow has gone from all 1,000 springs in North Florida. It's an enormous effect we've had due to our never-ceasing increase in using groundwater for everything, especially in our area. Agriculture is the biggest use, but also the big regional uses are the city of Jacksonville, the city of Gainesville, the city of Orlando. The pumping from these cities and these agricultural uses is just overwhelming the ability of the springs to provide necessary base flow to our rivers.
Our guest is Robert Knight. He's the director of the Howard T. Odom Florida Springs Institute. He's based just outside of Gainesville and High Springs, and this is WMNF in Tampa. So, Robert, don't the water management districts say to communities like Jacksonville and Gainesville, or say to agriculture, don't overpump from the aquifer? Isn't that the purpose of the water management districts?
It is the water management district's role to regulate the uses of water. The first criteria that they are supposed to respect is provide enough water for the natural systems so that they're not significantly harmed. And in the process of doing that, I'm afraid that there's been some very poor science and regulations developed that actually have allocated excessive groundwater use for major springs like Silver Springs, the formerly the biggest spring in the world, has lost about 40% of its average flow from overallocation of groundwater in the Orlando area primarily. But the springs on the Suwannee River have been very negatively impacted by overallocation of groundwater to the city of Jacksonville, where they have a very large groundwater use permit. The reality is that every drop of water, every gallon of water that we extract from the aquifer is one less gallon of water that comes out of the springs. And the springs can withstand quite a bit of that because there's a lot of gallons that come out of all of these springs. But we've taken too big a share, a significant harm. The science, the good science, shows that significant harm to the springs occurs at about a 5% reduction of their flows, maybe maximum of 10% on average. And yet the permitted amounts are, like I said, they're taking over 30% of the flow of the springs. They're way past the point of harm from excessive groundwater consumption.
If it is the local water management boards that are allowing this amount of pumping, if different people were to serve on the water management boards that were more environmentally oriented, could their springs be restored?
Yes, they certainly could be restored. It's as simple as cutting back on existing permits, but that is not simple with the makeup of the existing water management district boards. They are heavily stacked on the side of development. In fact, there's really no admitted environmentalists on any of the water management district boards in the Springs country that I'm aware of right now.
Is it up to the governor to appoint all the members of a local water management board?
Yes, sir. The governor has the full authority to do that, and nobody else does.
You said also, in addition to some of the springs turning black, some are increasingly yellow and green. When you say yellow and green, are you talking about algae?
Well, it sort of appears like that. Many of the springs are dominated now by filamentous algae. Not as thick as the goop in South Florida, but just alarming populations of algae instead of the pretty bright green grasses that used to occur in many of our springs. But the reason the water actually gets this yellow and greenish tint is because of that tannic water. Enough of that tannic water has gotten into the aquifer in places like in Alachua County. Alachua County owns Poe Springs, which is a very popular park, or was in the past. It was blue for most of my lifetime, but in the last 15, 20 years or so, it's turned green or yellow because when it does reverse, the first time it reversed ever that was recorded, it was in 2012. The tannic water actually went into the aquifer there. And as it slowly bleeds back out of the aquifer when the spring is flowing again, mixing with the clear water, the blue water, and the tannic water, you get a greenish tint in the water. So it looks very different. Instead of the springs being blue, they look green.
Hmm. Robert, there's nothing better in the summertime here in Florida in months like July, August, and September to kayak or float or even swim in a Florida spring. There's nothing as wonderful as that, is there? Is there anything more wonderful, do you think?
Well, that's the hidden secret of Central North Florida is the springs. That's why people live here. It's what makes summer tolerable. And like in High Springs, the reason we put the North Florida Springs Environmental Center in High Springs is because a million people a year come through High Springs to go recreate in the springs. It's big business, and we're unfortunately damaging that business. There's a lot of people still recreating in springs, and they're still cool. They're just not what they could be right now, and so that's one reason we started the center, was just to raise awareness about these issues. And now they're really, it's a delightful way to cool your body down during the summertime.
Robert Knight is our guest. He's the director of the Florida Springs Institute, and this is WMNF 88.5 FM. Have any springs here in Florida completely stopped flowing? If you went back 75 or 100 years and you'd find a vibrant, healthy spring, and now it's dried up completely?
Yes, unfortunately, there's a growing list of those springs. The first one that really caught the public's attention was Kissingen Springs, which is in Polk County, that fed the Peace River, and it was a very popular recreational site. It's what we call a second magnitude spring, but it had a flow of 30 or 40 million gallons a day, which is a very significant amount of water. It was heavily used for recreation in the 20s up to the 40s, but in the early 1950s, it stopped flowing, completely ceased flowing in response to excessive groundwater pumping, primarily for the phosphate industry, but also for agriculture. And the Water Management District, the Southwest Florida Water Management District there in Brooksville in your area, determined that was indeed the reason the spring stopped flowing, was excessive pumping, and concluded that they could not change that they did not have either the power or the will to reduce the groundwater pumping rates that would allow that spring to start flowing again.
Mm.
Yeah, that's not the only spring. White Springs up in North Florida has essentially stopped flowing, primarily because of pumping in Jacksonville, as well as pumping locally for another phosphate mine up in North Florida. But there's a couple dozen springs now that have stopped flowing that are more significant.
These springs are all connected to the underground aquifer. Have you ever dived or gone into the underground aquifer? I mean, could you describe for us what that aquifer looks like that is, in some cases, 10 or 15 feet under our feet?
It's just a magical place. I mean, it takes... I'm not a cave diver, and so when I went in to caves, it was very early on, and I didn't know better, but I have been down in some caves when my checkout dives when I got my scuba certification. But the aquifer is, caves large and small through the limestone. So if you can imagine any dry cave you've been in, like up in Mariana, Florida, Florida Cavern State Park, think of that full of water, and the water is so clear down in the ground, and unless the dark water's gotten in, but usually, historically, the water is so clear that you can't see the water. You feel like you're floating in midair in these caves, and the images of cave divers, which are taken with many lights, are just astounding for the size of the caves and the clarity of the water. But when the reality of being down in those caves is, it is pitch black. It is so black that there's absolutely no light, and without your light working, it can be frightening. But it's a beautiful land, and we're lucky to have so many competent cave divers in the state that illustrate it for us and show it to us.
So at its best, this is a pristine source of very clean water.
That's right. There are over a million wells in North Florida, private wells, tapping that water. And that basically allows people to live anywhere in North Florida. You can put a well down into the limestone aquifer and get potable water right out of your well with no treatment required. And that's the way we'd like to keep it. That's a relatively small percentage of the water use. The big water use is in these giant wells that are being put in, 10, 12, 16-inch wells that are being put in to pump millions of gallons for individual users. Typically, farmers are putting more and more of large irrigation wells in where they're pumping from 100,000 gallons a day to millions of gallons a day to irrigate crops. And that, unfortunately, is a really, dumb thing to do with this pristine water source. It is way too valuable to use it for watering watermelons and corn and things like that.
Robert, do we charge when an individual homeowner or a farmer or an agricultural business let's say a bottled water company or a city, when anybody sticks a well down into the aquifer, do we as the state of Florida charge them for withdrawing this pristine water?
No, we do not. Florida is not totally unusual, but it's fairly unusual from many states in the country where water is privately owned. All the water in Florida is publicly owned. It's for the public good. And yet we give these permits and we charge nothing for it, for the actual water. So the city of Jacksonville has a permit for 150 million gallons a day. You know, a gallon of water, if you buy it at the grocery store, is about $2. So that's a lot of value in that water, and yet they get that water completely for free. Farmers get that water for free, and private people with private wells get that water for free. It's the only cost to the utilities, the farmers, and private individuals is the cost of putting in the well and pumping the water, which is roughly 10 cents a thousand gallons. It's trivial. It's essentially nothing, no charge. That's one of our big problems, is that we're giving this water away for free, and so people are treating it like it's unlimited and it's free, which it is.
And down here in our area, Zephyr Hills pumps it out of Crystal Springs, just north of Tampa, and then sells it back to us for a dollar for 8 ounces or 12 ounces.
Yeah, more than the price of gasoline. I think it's pretty funny. In the city, you pay about $5 a thousand gallons, so you're paying about, you know, half a cent or something for a gallon. But when you buy it at the store, it's over $2 a gallon, and so that's kind of funny that people are willing to pay for water. But that just shows you how valuable water is, too. It's a mistaken belief that the water that you get from in bottled water, bottled springs water, is any better than the water you get in a municipality. It's totally wrong. In fact, we're analyzing this groundwater for nitrate, which is toxic to humans, and actually it is likely implicating cancers, and it's elevated in much of our groundwater, including bottled springs water, and that's from mostly from the fertilizer we're putting on the ground. Over 300 million pounds a year of nitrogen is going on the ground as fertilizer in the Springs region alone.
I want to follow up on that in just a moment, but let me ask you, Robert, is the Floridan aquifer, is that aquifer below the state of Florida, is that in danger of being overpumped right now, or because of phosphate, because of agriculture, because of the cities, and because of private homeowners?
Based on our best analysis, and this is published, overall water balance for the Floridan aquifer, it is definitely being overpumped already. It's about, the U.S. Geological Survey tells us it's about 3.6 billion gallons a day being pumped from the Floridan aquifer in Florida and Georgia combined. The aquifer extends into Georgia. And that is fully a third of the average recharge the aquifer from rainfall each year. So during a dry year, when we get about half of our average rainfall, the aquifer is, the pumping is almost equal to all the water recharging, well over 50% of the water recharging the aquifer. And luckily, we have wet years sometimes, too, which help bring aquifer levels back up. But, yeah, the data clearly show to me and to other independent scientists that we are overpumping the aquifer to the point of significantly harming our surface water resources, our springs and our rivers that are dependent on those spring flows for base flow.
Our guest is Robert Knight. He is the director of the Florida Springs Institute, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. So, Robert, getting to the question of nitrate, so that is beginning to affect the quality of that pristine water in the aquifer. Where is that nitrate coming from?
Well, it's well past the point of beginning to affect the quality of the water in the aquifer. We've got plenty of data that shows that the quality of water in the springs has been degraded over the last 30 years, and probably before that, but since the 1970s, 1980s, the spring nitrate levels have been going up, and the springs are representing the quality of the groundwater that we drink. Those levels are very high in many of our springs. For example, Rainbow Springs, which isn't far from you, has a nitrate concentration of 2.3, which is several thousand percent higher than the background and much higher than the standard for springs. And it turns out that about 70% of the springs in Florida are above the state numeric standard for nitrogen. And the reason there's a standard is because it's been shown that elevated nitrate increases the amount of algae in these springs and to the detriment of the springs. It changes the ecology of the springs. It's mostly coming from fertilizer. I'd say overall on the Springs region, it's about 80% from fertilizer, and then and that's both agricultural and urban fertilizer. And it's mostly, actually most of it's from agriculture into the nitrogen fertilizer, the livestock that we keep now, the millions of animals that we keep in Florida, cattle, chickens especially, and horses. Those are very large sources of nitrogen to the aquifer, to the point where about a large part, about 20% of the Florida aquifer overall of Florida is contaminated to a level that really could be harmful to drink, even though it's not above the human drinking water standard. It's well above the standard for springs, and it's actually in many areas at levels that are implicated in three to five-fold increase in risk of cancers. So I think it's a serious problem, and that alone, if we didn't care about the springs, that alone would be enough to make sensible people want to reduce our nitrogen load.
I was up along the Rainbow River just a few weeks ago, and I noticed a guy spreading fertilizer and insecticide. In fact, a bunch of people just had their lawns treated with the fertilizer in the spring, and they live right next to the river, which seemed very odd to me that the runoff from their house could go in and pollute the river.
Yeah, it's the aquifer is under all of us, and so in those areas where we don't have clay soils, where we have just sandy soils under us and right over the limestone, the contamination is straight. It goes straight down from your yard, and in around Rainbow Springs, it's a what's called a karst area where the sand covers the limestone, and the fertilizer you put on your lawns there goes almost directly into the aquifer and then comes out of the aquifer at the springs. So everybody's involved in this, and it's foolish what we do, but it's mostly ignorance of what it's causing. And the state does have a program to clean up this nitrate disaster that we've gotten into, this is not just the latest administration, although it's gotten worse. It's been going on for over 20 years, 20 or 30 years, like I said. We've been letting this happen, this pollution happen. They've got a program to deal with it, but it's not genuine. It is really the appearance of regulation, and it's not really going to help. And there's a number of environmental groups, all the groups that represent these springs, are going to fight their program in court because it's not going to be effective. And we have a lot of evidence that the measures they're taking are not sufficient to actually turn the nitrate pollution problem around. And it's, like I said, it's not just a problem for the springs, it's a problem for drinking the water that we all drink.
To what extent do septic tanks contribute to the pollution of the aquifer?
They're, in some areas, the biggest source of nitrogen pollution. In highly developed areas that were developed with septic tanks instead of central sewer, septic tanks can be up to 50% or more of the nitrogen load. But overall, they're only about 15% if you look at the whole Springs region. But we have a lot of septic tanks. We have over 300,000 septic tanks just in the area that's the state's currently developing these restoration plans for. And to connect those septic tanks after they've been put in, it is from $15,000 to $30,000 per tank to connect them to a central sewer. So we should never have put them in the first place in areas of high density. And yet the state is still allowing that. We still haven't bit the bullet and stopped using septic tanks in high-density areas. It's foolish. It's going to cost the taxpayers billions of dollars to actually prevent the pollution coming from these septic tanks.
Hmm. There are some people arguing right now about whether or not septic tanks should have been inspected. The state passed a law and then repealed it pretty quickly just a few years ago. But it sounds like the problem is the existence of the septic tanks more than just simply the inspection of the tanks.
Yeah, you're exactly right on that. Inspecting tanks that are operating in these karst areas will not prevent them from polluting the groundwater. They put levels of nitrogen in the groundwater that are way above the human health drinking water standard. And when you get a lot of properties on small lots, half acre, 1 acre lots, and all on septic tanks, essentially everybody's drinking each other's pollution.
Yikes.
Which is, if they've got private wells, that's kind of scary, and it's unhealthy, that's for sure.
So, Robert, is there a connection between, we see the toxic algae in Lake Okeechobee and the green glop, the toxic glop that's going out to the East Coast, Indian River, and over to the West Coast, to the Caloosahatchee, and then into the Gulf of Mexico. Is there a connection between that kind of pollution that we see in Lake Okeechobee and what you're talking about, the danger to Florida Springs and the aquifer?
There is it's very similar causes. If you go to the root causes, their causes are agricultural pollution, urban pollution, and septic tanks. Those are the primary sources. It's nitrogen down there. It's nitrogen up here in North Florida. In fact, we've been looking at that for the rivers themselves, and the Suwannee River is putting out more nitrogen than both the Caloosahatchee and St. Lucie rivers combined from pollution from farming. It's putting out about 5,000 tons a year of nitrogen into the Gulf of Mexico. And really, for the first time, I think, the last decade, last couple of decades or so, we're seeing red tide up in that part of the Gulf of Mexico. Red tide is fueled by nitrogen, and we're putting out so much in the Suwannee estuary that we're seeing effects. And I'm sure that there's a similar response going on with the Coochie. I know the Springs Coast Springs, Crystal River, Homosassa, Chazawitska, Wekiwachi, those springs are all putting out elevated nitrogen, and that certainly is having pollution effects in the estuary, the Gulf of Mexico.
This red tide outbreak is really killing the Southwest Florida coast right now, and killing tourism. It's killing fish. People are being scared away. Reading about it and hearing about it. People from up north and then in Europe, they're not coming to Florida anymore. But scientists, I think, around here have been a little bit slow to tide, or rather to connect red tide to elevated nitrate levels. What's the science on that? Is there a real clear connection between the red tide and elevated nitrate?
Well, apparently not. People who are experts in that field claim that there is not a strong connection. I'm somewhat doubtful of that myself, and I'm an aquatic ecologist with over 35 years of experience here in the state. But the people that actually work on red tide the most say that the red tide actually forms initially out in the Gulf of Mexico and then moves into shore. But I think there's no doubt that there, when the red tide is up and active, that the nitrogen coming out of these rivers is helping to fuel that. And it certainly is associated that with the same time we're getting these incredible algal blooms that are causing the guacamole thick algae on the beaches. That's when we're getting red tide that is killing porpoises, manatees. Even there was a whale shark washed up in those images. It's dreadful. Red tide is a specific kind of algae that produces toxins. And of course, the green algae that you see, also some of those produce toxins. So I think it's a combination of factors. If I had to put money on it, I'd say that reducing the nitrogen loads that we're putting out from our rivers would definitely reduce the red tide formation. But that's my opinion.
Robert, what about Tallahassee? I mean, could you give us the big picture about Tallahassee? We're here. This is an election year. A lot of politicians are saying that we're protecting the environment and we've done a good job in Tallahassee, and we are on the way to a better environment. What kind of job do you think Tallahassee has done in protecting this pristine water that we've got, or formerly pristine water that we've got underground?
I'd have to say shameful, a shameful job. The current current administration in the last 20 years of Republican domination in the Florida legislature has led to an increasing relaxation of rules that the state was very proactive on in the 1970s and 1980s in terms of protecting these waters in Florida, both our drinking water and our natural surface waters. That's been totally relaxed under the current administration in the Republican legislature. And the fact that they passed a Springs Protection Act in 2016 is really ludicrous. That was opposed by the Florida Springs Council, which is the group of 45 member organizations representing over 350,000 people that are interested in the health of Springs. They opposed that legislation. The legislation was a feel-good piece of legislation that has had very minimal positive effects, but continues to provide cover for politicians that who want to say they've done something to protect the environment, and in fact, they've made things worse.
When we hear politicians say, we don't want to have tougher pollution rules because we don't want to hurt business, we don't want to have too many regulations on business, when you hear politicians say that, what do you hear?
I hear I'm the politician, I'm being supported by special interests who make a profit from having less responsibility for the pollution they cause. It is nothing but a cover for for-profit organizations to pollute more. And I don't think any organization pollutes on purpose, but they certainly do it knowingly, and the state knows they're doing it, and yet relaxing those rules allows more pollution. And so I think that's shameful, and we're certainly hearing that, too, from our local politicians who are saying they help protect the environment by passing the Florida Springs Protection Act of 2016. It's not true. That act was written by special interests, and I'm not going to name any names, but very high-level people in our state government were involved in writing that and supporting that act, in spite of the fact that it was opposed by anybody concerned about springs and the health, the future health of our springs and our water quality.
Robert Knight of the Florida Springs Institute, is it too late for our springs here in Florida? And if it's not too late, what needs to be done?
No, that's a great question. It's not too late. The springs will recover with or without us. I think it may be without us. I'm a little bit pessimistic that it's going to happen in my lifetime, but they could recover very quickly. All we have to do to increase their flow to what it should be is reduce our groundwater pumping. So that's just a simple method. That doesn't cost anything. That's basically our state government listening to the real science and setting groundwater use limits that are protective of the springs. That could happen almost overnight and with a different group of leaders in the state. The nitrogen pollution is going to take years and decades to actually all rinse out of the aquifer, even if we stopped using so much fertilizer. But that can be done. Most people recognize that during years of good rainfall, there's enough nitrogen in the rain to actually grow a green lawn. You don't have to fertilize your lawn to make it green. During years of low rainfall, your lawn may be a little brown, but it pops right back in most places. And so the amount of fertilizer we're using for crops is pretty necessary. But what we're doing now is farming our lowest quality lands in North Florida. All the dairies in South Florida were chased up to North Florida, and they bought the cheapest land, which is sandy soil over the limestone, and they're incredible pollution sources to the aquifer. We have springs near dairies that are putting out incredibly high levels of nitrate, way above the human health standard too. So there are things we can do. We can limit the use of nitrogen fertilizer. People shouldn't be fertilizing their lawns at all, really, if they're on a vulnerable part of the aquifer. And farmers need to cut way back, and they need to be farming in the right places on better soils without such direct input into the aquifer.
when you see somebody who's got an automatic lawn sprinkler and the sprinkler is going off in the middle of a rainstorm, are you tempted to act like the police and say something to that person?
But I don't. Those uses are individually very small. Okay, a homeowner is using about an average of 150 gallons per day, and that's too much. Once you become aware of your water use, you can easily and very comfortably live on about 30 or 40 gallons per day per person in Florida. If people would cut back their personal use and everybody did it, it would make a big difference. But individually, it's not very helpful to go and yell at your neighbor about that. But when people are getting permits, consumptive use permits, and there's over 29,000 consumptive use permits in Florida, and they're still issuing them of over 100,000, 200,000 gallons a day, those people have a larger responsibility to do what's right. And I think that the biggest bang for the buck is both it's in agriculture and agricultural water use, and as well as in urban public utilities, really putting higher rates on water use so that people will stop using so much. I mean, the way to do it is to put a fee on groundwater use for everybody, and I think that is a very sensible thing to do. You could call it an aquifer protection fee and then use that money to go back and further provide environmental protections. But we need to do that on water use and on fertilizer use, put a fees on those things. If people want to use excessive amounts, let them do it, but make them pay for it.
And that would take some leadership from Tallahassee.
A lot. Yes. We've been suggesting it for years. Actually, there was a suggestion of water use fees back in the Governor Martinez period, and the state did an investigation of it and found that it wouldn't hurt the economy at all. You know, back to one of your earlier questions, these algal blooms are killing the economy, and the fact that the beaches are closed is killing the economy. Well, the economy in North Florida is going to suffer the same way, and I think already is, from the loss of ecotourism as these springs are increasingly polluted and stop flowing. So this is an economic issue as well as a health issue. And so it makes sense to protect the environment, since the environment is the main attraction in Florida. People don't come to Florida just for the malls. They come for beautiful waterways and lakes and rivers and springs.
There's nothing like it in North America. Nothing like the Florida Springs in North America.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Robert, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No, I really appreciate the fact that you're raising awareness with your listeners, and I really appreciate public radio in general. So thank you for everything you're doing.
Robert Knight with the Howard T. Odom Florida Springs Institute. Thanks for coming on WMNF.
You're certainly welcome. Thank you.
Well, that was an interview that I did earlier with Robert Knight, who is the director of the Florida Springs Institute. And you can find him and information about Florida Springs at floridaspringsinstitute.org. Well, let's open up the phone lines and take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. I think the environment is going to become one of the big issues in the fall campaign, especially as we vote for governors, especially as we vote for a U.S. senator. And I thought it was interesting that Robert made a connection between the red tide that's affecting us here in Southwest Florida, in Sarasota and Manatee counties, hopefully not in Pinellas, but it could move in that direction. He made a connection between red tide and the nitrates, the fertilizer runoff, and the effluent from farms that is flowing into the Gulf of Mexico. He made that connection. Very interesting. Thanks to Jan Simpson. She's our phone producer today. There's a very interesting article today in the Miami Herald about water pollution here in the state of Florida, and I'll just read a couple of lines from it. The headline is, Florida cut water quality monitoring even as algae worsened. And the writers Matthias Ochner and Jenny Staletovich write this. Over the last decade, as the state of Florida fought federal efforts to protect water, shrunk its own environmental and water management agencies, and cut funding to an algae task force, monitoring for water quality has plummeted here in Florida, they write. And they also write that Governor Rick Scott, who ordered budget cuts to water management agencies for five consecutive years and dismantled the Department of Community Affairs, which regulated growth and agreed to postpone cleaning up Lake Okeechobee, issued a press release saying his administration had spent millions on red tide research, including $5.5 million awarded to the Moat Marine Laboratory since 2013. But I do think the environment and who is a better steward of the environment is going to be a big issue in the fall elections. Well, let's take your phone calls at 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And thanks to Jan Simpson, our phone producer today. We're going to go to Chris in Tampa. Hi, Chris. What's on your mind today?
Well, the main problem, Rob, is Mosaic Phosphate Mining Company, and they're pumping millions of gallons per day. Swift Mud gave them a permit for 70 million gallons per day. And the fact that there is no oversight, there's no monitoring of their emissions into our waterways or into our air and what they draw from the Florida aquifer. So it's all based on the honor system. They all say, yeah, we'll follow the regulations, but there's no Florida Department of Environmental Protection. There's no EPA monitoring all their emissions or their withdrawals from the waterways, and that needs to be emphasized. I don't think we should blame the people as much, the farmers as much, as that interview portrayed.
Well, yeah, you know, Chris, I think the facts are that phosphate takes an extraordinary amount of fresh water from underground, but and its fertilizer causes a lot of the nitrates that end up in our aquifer and in our rivers, in our streams, in our lakes, in Lake Okeechobee. But I think there's no doubt, too, that when it comes to pollution in our lakes and places like Lake Okeechobee and even underground, that runoff from farms and especially over-fertilization of vegetable farms where that occurs and runoff from cattle farms and industrialized chicken factories, et cetera, hog farms, that contributes to the nitrate pollution too. So there's no doubt about it. Now, is the phosphate industry a good industry, and do we need so much fertilizer, and does that fertilizer cause dead zones in places like the mouth of the Mississippi? Yes. But I also think that, you know, we got to look at septic tanks. We got to look at agriculture. It's not just one source of pollution. So that's what I think. So, Chris, sure. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your call.
Well, that's true. If I could also add that there's a solution that I'm surprised hasn't gotten more airtime from Solitude Lake Management. They're a company that bubbles ozone into bodies of water and, you know, and into also inlets. So that very quickly the ozone will kill the red tide and cyanobacteria, which, by the way, is not an algae, it's a bacteria. So that's a whole other topic, but very quickly we'll kill the red tide, and you can see the within a day or two, I'm looking at WINK News did a story on it. And the only drawback of which I could think would be that it might kill the anaerobic, meaning cannot survive in the presence of oxygen, the anaerobic beneficial microorganisms, which could possibly be cultured and then reintroduced. And it also, ozone is also going to degrade plant proteins, so it might have an impact that way.
All right. Well, Chris,
my understanding of the biology of it, but it looks very encouraging.
All right, Chris, people should look up that story on Wink TV. Thanks for suggesting it. Chris, thank you. Let's go to David in Tampa. David, you're on WMNF on 88.5 FM. What would you like to say?
Well, Rob, that was a very interesting interview about the springs. I enjoyed that. And I had the privilege of living on Highway 340 up in Gilchrist County. And I was very close to the Gilchrist State Park, new one. It used to be Blue Springs. Now it's Gilchrist Blue Springs State Park. There's also Jenny Springs up there, which is a real popular place for the students from Gainesville to come over and let loose on the weekends, especially Memorial Day. It gets pretty wild there, not a very family-oriented park. But I was saying there was a a spring bottling plant right up there in between the two. It's called Ice River Springs, and it's a huge freshwater bottling plant. Anybody wants to look that up, they have a very poor safety record, very poor track record. There was a man killed there a few years ago. Pallets of water fell on him, but very interesting aquifers up there, very interesting system, and the most beautiful by far would be Itchituckney Springs, just a little bit north of High Springs in Fort White.
Yeah, Itchituckney is incredibly beautiful. How I've not been to Gilchrist Blue Springs. How nice is that?
Well, it's wonderful. It was privately owned, and then the state was able to buy it, thank goodness, before it fell into private hands or another bottling company would come in there and take it. But very pristine, very natural, very much old Florida, where Ginny's nice too, but Ginny's just a little bit on the wild side.
Okay. David, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, both of those just northwest of Gainesville, not too far from the University of Florida. I got to say, I find it strange that bottled water companies can put in a well and then take out the pristine water from the aquifer or from a spring and then sell it back to us at exorbitant prices. I find that very odd. What do you think about that? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Ron writes this. He's in Tampa. He says, while Florida turns guacamole green, Governor Rick is in Bogota, Colombia, schmoozing with the new right-wing president of Colombia, Mr. Duque. Thanks for caring for Florida. Rick Scott, don't hurry back, writes Ron in Tampa. And James writes this. He's a captain. He says, this past weekend, I took a class of sailing students from St. Petersburg north to Anclote Key and instead of south to Charlotte Harbor because of the reports from friends in southwest Florida telling me how bad the algae and red tide is in that area. I'm happy to report that we did not witness any signs of red tide or algae blooms in the waters north of Clearwater, and there was a normal amount of sea life activity, including dolphins and seabirds in the area. Yeah, I was driving over the Gandy Bridge the other night and saw dolphins cresting in the water. I thought that was just beautiful. 813-239-9663. Let's go to John in St. Pete. Hi, John. You're on. What would you like to say?
Rob, are you familiar with the UN report on animal agriculture contributing to CO2 emissions?
Yeah, I've seen some reports. There's a good documentary about that too. You're saying that animal agriculture contributes to global warming, is what you're saying.
Especially cattle rearing. They're saying here that it's actually it's more contributing than all the autos and truck emissions in the world, and that it's the biggest contributor to destroying the rainforest for cattle raising. The dairy industry is one of the biggest polluters of our rivers and streams, causing dead zones everywhere, and not just the environmental impact, but if you want to connect into the health impact, one of the greatest contributors to cancer, heart disease, et cetera. But as far as greenhouse gases goes, it seems like they never bring this up. They act like, you know, it's cars and trucks, et cetera, but they never bring up cattle rearing, animal agriculture, and as the wealth increases in the world, more and more people are eating meat now, and it's going to get worse. And really, that's, you know, if we could go plant-based or get closer to plant-based, we could certainly help save the environment. It would be a biggest contributor. You know, everybody says, you know, get a low water shower head or whatever, save water, don't use your water your lawn. But that is, like, so minuscule and insignificant to the amount of water is used to raise dairy and cattle. And,
yeah, well, John, I think you're right. I mean, I still think we should save water. I still think we should lower pollution levels.
Sure,
and I still think
if you save 40 gallons of water a day, if you don't eat meat, you're saving 1,000 gallons of water a day.
Well, you know, John, a lot of people have already moved toward a more plant-based diet. Especially in this in the group of people you're talking to. So
yeah,
all right, John. Thanks.
Okay,
you're right. You're right.
Up.
Yep, it's important. Thank you for that. And maybe we can squeeze in one more phone call. You're listening to 88.5 FM. I'm Rob Lori. Here's Lou in High Springs. Hi, Lou. You're on WMNF. We just have about 40 seconds.
Oh, okay. I just want to urge people who are concerned about our springs to find a local group and find a way to get involved. We need all hands on deck to find solutions, and we need some creative thinkers. Everybody can do something. So if you're concerned about this, please find your local springs or environmental advocacy group and get involved with them.
And Lou, do you have a favorite group up there in High Springs?
Well, I work with the Itchituckney Alliance. So, yes, that's my favorite group. And all of our Springs groups are really doing excellent work. The other thing I would say real quick is there's so much finger-pointing, but we are all responsible. We all have some level of personal responsibility to solve these problems.
All right, Lou, thank you so much. Thanks for calling in. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up, 813-238-8001, and record your comment about this show on extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11. Now stay tuned for your hero, Mark Bureau. This is WMNF 10.